Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you very much. Hello, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us. Today, we're going to be looking at the justice system here in the United States. We're going to be talking about it with a highly qualified attorney and talking about many aspects of it. There are a lot of people who think the justice system is kind of failing us. Things aren't, you know, they aren't going well in many areas. There's the rise in racial unrest, religious persecution, political violence. You know, there's a lot going on, a lot in the news, and bias in the criminal justice system risks creating a permanent underclass where people are kind of locked into poverty regardless of their ability with no hope to close the gap on opportunities. We've seen the slow glacial progress for African Americans and other marginalized people of color, and if our justice system isn't part of the solution, then the system just doesn't work. It fails. And if our justice system isn't open, available, and accessible, then, yep, the system fails. And if judges refuse to deal with these issues and the disadvantaged don't have access to good lawyers and fundamental fairness, well, the system fails again. And when communities lose trust in institutions, that's right, the system fails. Our guest is attorney Carol Sigmund. She's doing what she can to restore that trust and rebuild these institutions from within. She's an amazing lady with a remarkable background. She happens to be the chair of the construction law team for Porzio, Bromberg, and Newman in New York. They represent clients in the world of construction, defect litigation, relating to issues that arise when adjacent owners develop their properties. And for over 30 years, Carol has helped her clients expedite the construction project by ensuring that proper contracts are all in place. But that's her day-to-day work. Beyond that, she has a passion for the law profession itself. She served as the president of the New York County Lawyers Association from 2015 to 2017. She is currently the vice president for the New York State Bar Association's First Judicial District. And she says they're looking at issues of access to justice, operation of the court system, improving the court system to make it more functional for citizens. And she says we're also examining these issues in conjunction with the legislature and the governor to improve the judiciary and make the criminal justice system more fair. One would assume that is primarily in the state of New York, but I'm sure it goes more broad than that. But let's find out. Let's talk to Carol now. See what she has to say about this amazing subject, which is something she is really passionate about. Carol Sigmund, welcome. Nice to have you with us here on Close Up Talk Radio. It's a delight to have you as a guest. How are you?
I'm good, and thank you for having me.
Listen, it's a pleasure to have you. We don't get the opportunity to talk to someone like you with your background, your credits, and your interest in what you're focusing on. I would first off thinking, you know, knowing about a lot what lawyers do, that what you're involved in your day-to-day work in the construction area is pretty fascinating and critically important. I'd be right in that, right?
Oh, yeah, I love it. It's really very interesting, intellectually stimulating. And we have an opportunity to make the world a little better. At least we try to.
Are you kind of in the throes of things when a building goes down next to another building? You know, it happens occasionally in New York. There are problems. Explain to me a little bit about where your function comes in the construction arena for this big law firm.
Well, in the area of adjacent properties, what we don't want is the building next door coming down. What we want is safe construction, and we want to protect the neighbors around the building as well as the workers within the building. And so there's a procedure in New York to allow neighboring properties to protect themselves and at the same time for developers to access limited parts of their neighbor properties in order to get their buildings up faster and more efficiently. So there's a kind of a good neighbor policy by statute in New York, but it is very safety dependent. And we do work very hard to have safe buildings. It doesn't always happen, but we try.
No, I know. I was just thinking about building. So you actually buy air in New York. Don't you? I mean,
you
want to build
air, right?
A 12-story
yes.
building? That's right. You want to buy a 13-story building? You pay more for the air up at 13th story.
Yeah.
It's true, though, isn't
right.
it?
Right. Yeah, it is true.
Yeah.
We buy and sell air in New York.
Exactly right. You're exactly right. You do. Let me talk a little bit about your passion, about what you're doing with the Bar Association now. And your profession, your passion for the law profession itself, and this feeling that many people have that the justice system just isn't working the way it should be. It's got to be done better. Let's talk about what got you so interested in this.
That's interesting. Well, I guess I'm not exactly certain what first triggered me to notice the issue, but I grew up in segregated Virginia. When my family first moved to Virginia, there were still signs up that said white only and colored only. There were still two water fountains in places, one marked white only and one marked colored only. And it never seemed very fair. And coming from the North as we did, we didn't approve of that sort of thing, and my parents were very critical. And, in fact, we didn't patronize businesses in Virginia for that reason until well after 1964 and 1965 when the Equal Accommodations Acts were passed. So I think that's where it started when I first saw what amounted to really inhuman treatment of people just based on their skin color, which just wasn't rational. And it's kind of continued to be something that I've watched very closely, and of course as I became a lawyer and then began to see the justice system, I began to see that it wasn't just people of color who suffered, but people who were poor. So you could be white, you could be black, you could be Asian, you could be Hispanic, but if you were poor, the system was not working for you as well as it was working for the rich. And we know that you cannot have a justice system that has two types of justice, one for poor people and one for rich people. There can be only one justice system. There can only be objective justice, and it has to be based on facts and law and not based on immutable characteristics about people or their economic circumstances. Otherwise, the system, as you put it in the intro, fails.
Yeah, it just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. It has to be, we have to look at these issues hard.
So you're a busy lady.
So,
keep going. You didn't mean to interrupt you. You're on a roll. Keep going.
So what I was going to say was that as the justice system has evolved, as, you know, we've gone from talking about integration and desegregation and, you know, move to really attacking white supremacy, we have to attack that issue in the justice system too. And we need to look at all of these issues, and we need to make the system more sensitive to the needs of everyone, and we need to make the system function better. And function better just doesn't mean necessarily what people think it means. To me, it means that justice is made more rapid, it's made more exact, and it's made more speedy.
And well, how does one go about doing this? How do you do this?
Well, you look at the procedure. For example, if you look at the New York court system, the vast majority of people who utilize the New York court system don't have lawyers. In landlord-tenant court, most of the tenants don't have lawyers. Many of the people who are in the New York civil court don't have lawyers. And so this system needs to be simple enough for them to navigate without lawyers. We haven't always kept it simple, but we should. Computers are helping. Computerized forms. The courts have developed do-it-yourself systems that are helping people to navigate this system themselves. And there are other efforts being made, such as we have facilitators in the housing court area now, non-lawyers who understand the housing court system to help tenants in housing court. And we have pro bono programs, lawyers for a day, and other types of programs in consumer debt to try to help folks who are without lawyers dealing with credit card companies. So there are lots of programs that have been developed to try to deal with these issues. What we really need is civil Gideon in this country.
You know, I'm amazed to hear that there are so many litigants that don't have lawyers. I thought everybody had to have a lawyer in court in New York, except, for example, in small claims courts where you don't need a lawyer generally. It's amazing you say they don't have in some of these specific courts that they don't have a lawyer. And people come in, they don't know the law. I mean, for the most part, do they? They're not familiar with it at all. It doesn't work for them.
They don't. No.
Yeah.
That's why we need something like civil Gideon. We need to have, in certain circumstances, the state needs to provide attorneys.
Well, that would be up to the Bar Association, wouldn't it? Or would that be the legislature
that
should decide that?
That would be the legislature. We don't have that kind of resource. But there is a good argument. I mean, New York is experimenting with it in housing court. There's a press to get the state legislature to provide attorneys in certain federal immigration cases. But civil Gideon is probably the right approach, particularly in these complicated areas.
Let me ask you a question. A lot of people may not understand what you mean when you say civil Gideon. Could you define that?
Yes. Gideon versus Wainwright was a case in the late 60s, in which criminal defendants were guaranteed a right to counsel. Civil Gideon is the notion of a guaranteed right to counsel in certain types of civil proceedings, such as landlord-tenant, and in disputes in family court, where there are also not very often lawyers. So civil Gideon would be an extension of Gideon versus Wainwright into certain civil areas.
You know, talking with you, there are many cases I could bring up, I guess, about what's going on in New York. But there was one that really has bothered me so much once I saw it on television last night, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about a man who had just been paroled. I don't know how long he had been paroled, but he attacked a 65-year-old woman on the streets of New York.
Oh,
viciously.
God, that was horrible.
Did you see that last
horrible.
Night? And there were people in the picture watching this happen. No one went to that lady's help. And this guy was obviously a vicious criminal. He had been paroled after killing his mother. And these guys, somebody was using a phone, you know, photographing this. But there were three individuals within the picture that you could see what was going out on the street, and nobody bothered to help. Do you think those people are in trouble in some way for not going to that lady's help?
As a matter of law, there's no requirement to be a good Samaritan. However, I believe the employers of some of those folks are not pleased that they did not take more action, and I think some of them have been suspended. But there is no actual obligation to be a good Samaritan. What there is a civic duty to call the police. And I will tell you one story about myself, and you will think I am totally crazy. But I was near my apartment building in New York City one day, and there was a man just beating a woman pretty badly. And I made eye contact with the doorman, and I think he knew what I was planning to do. So I grabbed her away from him and ran her through the door, and he slammed the door so that the guy couldn't come in. And then the concierge called the police. But, it's a very quick instant when you think, I think I can do this. There's enough people around. I think I can pull it off without getting killed.
Yeah.
I will tell you that the police later lectured me on how dangerous what I did had been.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
So... yeah, it's a flash in an instant.
Well, it's happening. You know, this kind of thing is happening more and more in more big cities, and you hear about so many people leaving the big cities. I was listening to a woman this morning. She was a pretty high-ranking executive based in New York, moving her company to Dallas. And she was in Dallas and thrilled. And as she put it, I've been in New York for 20 years, da-da-da-da. I can't take it anymore. I got to get out. I'm sure you hear that a lot. Something's really gone wrong. You know, something has gone wrong. I don't know. Do you think the justice system is partially responsible for this? I mean, if they can let a guy who's in jail for murdering his mother out on parole, some would say, how in the hell did that happen? How did he get out? And look what he did.
Well, what he did was reprehensible. But the question we have is in any given day in New York, there are 250,000 people incarcerated. I mean, that is a massive number of people between the state and local and federal systems. We just have a lot of people in jail. There are serious studies by serious sociologists that jailing parents reduces the stability of the family. It reduces the opportunities their children will have. Children of people who have been incarcerated don't do as well in school. They don't do as well in life. There are pros and cons for incarceration, and right now there's an enormous con, which is the uncontrolled movement of COVID-19 through the prison system. So, frankly, it can be a death sentence, COVID-19, especially if you're incarcerated for something not like murder, but, you know, something more minor. So there are a lot of competing issues about keeping people in prison and whether we over-incarcerate in this country. I mean, these are hard questions. I'm not going to say they're easy, but there is the other side of that issue.
Well, let's talk about what you are doing and what others, you know, who are working with you in this effort to try and bring about some changes to help improve the justice system. And I presume we're focusing mainly with you on the justice system in New York, not nationally. Would that be right, or is this an effort that...
That would be fair. That would be fair. Yes, no, that would be fair.
Okay. All right.
I don't pretend to be a national expert on this, but...
Right.
But there are... The Bar Association's, the organized bar, is taking, I would call it a two-prong approach. We continually look at the systems of justice. We look at the way justice is administered. We look at how the courts work, and we make recommendations. The New York State Bar Association issued a very comprehensive report on the family court, I think about 4 or 5 years ago, which led to a dramatic increase in resourcing to the family courts to the benefit of, you know, New Yorkers who are using the family courts. And the city council came up with the plan to provide some attorney support for tenants. So there have been those kinds of efforts. At the same time, the bar associations also literally provide service. We have volunteers, we have programs, and we actually provide service. And in New York City, through the New York County Lawyers Association, where you very kindly mentioned I was president, we focus on the kinds of programs for the working poor. So we are looking for programs that will help families stay together, stay in their homes, maintain incomes, or even obtain additional benefits. We have a program to upgrade the discharges for veterans, particularly those that suffered from PTSD and were discharged dishonorably or less than honorably and are really entitled to upgraded discharges. So that program has been ongoing for a number of years. We have a program for ex-offenders that helps them get licenses from the New York State Department of State for things like being barbers or beauticians or security guards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another program that is, you know, makes people able to get jobs and able to support their families. We have a program to deal with the Central States Registry. New York has thousands of people on child abuse registries, sometimes put there for the most insidious reasons. you know, if the youngster gets hurt at school and some nurse marks it down as a home injury, and suddenly the mother and father are on some kind of child abuse register.
Yeah, they're in trouble.
And this affects their ability to get jobs. Yeah, and it
right.
causes some problems.
Yeah.
And
right.
they need to come off those. And we've been forcing due process hearings to get some of these people off of this list. Now, I admit these are not massive programs, but they are, you know, one day at a time, one family at a time, one program at a time. And the bar associations are doing this kind of work. There's other things that have been done over the years. After 9/11, it was the bar association that came in and through the efforts of Michael Miller, former president of both NYCLA and New York State Bar Association, they helped people get death certificates after the Twin Towers came down because there weren't bodies. You know, there was nobody to pronounce them. So how do you
right.
get insurance? How do you get Social Security? How do you do anything? You need a death certificate. And so there was help for death certificates. We try to answer the need as best we can, but we are doing it as volunteers. And we try to scale the program so that we can manage them but provide the most service we can with our volunteers and our volunteer dollars.
That's how we're
trying to make things better.
I was going to say, what would you say is the most important thing you're trying to accomplish? What's at the top of your list?
I believe the top of the list has to be expanding the right to counsel in family court, in housing court, and in certain other settings where either particularly the state is affecting people's rights, but they don't have counsel. For example, when they're taking children away from their parents, there should be a right to counsel. When people are being evicted, they need a right to counsel. I think that is the number one issue that we need to look at, civil Gideon.
And this is because these are people who can't afford an attorney for representation?
Correct.
Obvious.
Yeah.
You know, let me ask you your opinion of what's going on. You talk about taking children away from their parents. We hear about foster parents who are parents of children now along the border. This may not be in New York, you know, an issue you're facing in New York. But they're taking children who've been with foster parents and yanking them away from them so that they can take care of some of these immigrants that just have crossed the border in the last couple of days. And that's really disrupting these kids' lives, the ones who are in the foster family system. And I'm thinking, God, that's terrible. Why are they doing that? What do you think about that?
I think that the federal government and the state of Texas are just overwhelmed. I think they need to feel they need to move children elsewhere in order to make room at the border for all of these youngsters who are crossing the border unaccompanied. And they're trying to be, you can never win in this situation, because if you take the citizen children and move them further inland, you have disrupted them, but at least it's their citizens and they're moved inland. If you start moving immigrants inland, they get further from their home countries and further from the possibility of being reunited with their families, and it becomes very complicated, and the government is, I think, frankly, overwhelmed. I think no one realized or thought about what would happen with a change of administration at the border and the possibility that all of these unaccompanied children would show up at the border looking to enter the United States.
And do you think these unaccompanied children are being sent here by their parents or without anyone here to, you know, they don't have the connections here that they're coming to? They're just sending their kids, you know, 5 years, 7 years old, boom, go, goodbye. Have a nice life.
I suspect that there probably are people here, but because of the large number of children and the young ages, they may not be communicating effectively. And so the Border Patrol is overwhelmed and isn't able to unify these children with the people who are already in the United States who could take care of them. I mean, I just think it's a numbers game. I think the government is just overwhelmed.
Well, it's an example of how things are going crazy here in this country. Of course, the justice system is part of that.
If the Trump administration hadn't taken apart all of those programs that allowed people to apply for asylum in their home countries, and we hadn't withdrawn aid to those countries to try to improve the system for these folks in those countries, we wouldn't have created this imperative to come here. I mean, it's a terrible set of circumstances, and I think what we have to do is try to economically develop some of these Central American countries and try to make these home countries more amenable to their own citizens. And it's terrible.
That's a suggestion we hear quite often. Crazy. Make their countries better. The U.S. can do it. I'm amazed. Is there anything that you could – I'm wondering, really, if there are volunteers or people who can help you in what you're doing. But really, when you're talking volunteers at your level and the effort you're working, they've got to be lawyers. These are trained people who you need help from. So I guess
sometimes we need the help of social workers.
Social workers. Interesting.
Yeah. Social workers know how to navigate the benefit system.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's more the benefit system than the legal system that folks need help with. And I've always wanted to find a way to partner with some of the social work organizations to see if there was a way to provide some supplemental pro bono efforts with the aid of social workers because of their superior knowledge of how the plain old government benefit system works. I mean, we don't really learn that in law school.
Yeah.
But the social workers do.
Let me point out, you've got a wonderful a wonderful website, and it's your name, carolsigmund.com. And I guess if there are any social workers who would like to volunteer to help you, if they would, get in touch with you through that website, submit a resume or whatever, maybe
that might
be a big help. It's Carol, C-A-R-O-L, Sigmund is SIGMOND.com. You know, Carol, you've been a lawyer for a long time. You're heavily involved in so many areas of it. Is it what you thought it was going to be when you got into this field so many years ago, out of college?
No. I mean, I grew up on Perry Mason. So, it was, courtroom confrontations and people breaking down. It's not like that. It's a lot of digging. There's a lot of work involved. There's a lot of reading. There's a lot of study. We handle a lot of documents. We study the evidence. We study the law. It's not nearly as active as Perry Mason, but it's intellectually very stimulating, and I do enjoy it.
If you weren't a lawyer, what do you think you would have become? Any idea?
Well, I started life thinking that I wanted to be a demographer and study population.
Right. Wow.
I don't know that that's what I would have ended up doing if that's what I actually started out thinking about.
Well, listen, it's been a delight chatting with you, Carol. I'm impressed with what you do and the efforts that you're trying to put forward here to help out with the justice system in the city of New York. And all I can say is I wish you good luck. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us a little bit about it. You've given us some good food.
Thank
for
you
thought.
So much for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It's a delight to have you. Thank you, Matt, so much. That's Carol Sigmund. She has been our guest today. Amazing lawyer. She's the chair of the construction law firm for Porzio, Bomberg & Newman in Bromberg & Newman in the city of New York. Hope you enjoyed it. There's a lot to think about on this whole field of the justice system, and that was just a little bit of it. So thanks for being with us. I'm Doug Llewellyn. We'll see you next time right here on Close Up Talk Radio. Until then, take care of yourself, and be safe, okay? Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
Yeah, we sure do. I'm Doug Llewellyn. That's it for today, folks. Take care. See you next time. Bye.